My name is Don Roth, and I am going to present to you a study of God's calendar as portrayed in His holy word, the Bible. My background is that of an engineer. I spent 25 years in two large corporations. In those years, my concentration was solving problems for those corporations. Later, I started my own business, a machining business, for 17 years. And that business was a successful business. It started in a two-car garage and resulted in a company employing 45 individuals. The reason that I ended up with this study was the fact that in the year 2007, I was challenged by a group of people who kept a different kind of calendar. God's churches in general, as you probably realize, keep a calendar that is set by the Jewish authorities. And so therefore, they came along and said, well, your calendar that you're using is really wrong. The true calendar of God's word is a calendar that's based on sighting of the new moon. Well, I thought about that, and that it was a fairly serious accusation, and it needed to be answered. But I wasn't at the time prepared to really answer it in the way that it needed to be answered. And the way that it needed to be answered was a factual way. Now, during the spring of 2008, we had in the Midwest a rather large flood. And as a result of that flood, I decided that I would present a study on the Noachian flood. Of course, that is, of course, the greatest flood that this earth has ever seen. And as a result of that study in going through the Bible, I came across a rather strange, different approach in a sense. When I started studying it, I realized that Noah had left a large group of information giving dates and times, passages of times, during that year of the flood. I thought this is a rather curious thing to do, in a sense, and I wondered at the time. I thought, well, what does this really mean? Could this really be of any importance? And so I started documenting the passage of time during the flood, and I came up with a rather curious conclusion, and that is that the year of the flood wasn't 365 days or 360 days, as some would think, but was actually 385 days in length. Now, I'd like to show you how that is determined. Here I have this chart, and the chart shows the passage of time in Genesis. As you see, Genesis 7:11, it starts out that the flood began on the 17th day of the second month, 30 days in the first month plus 16 days in the second. Well, that comes to 46 days. The water, as everybody knows, 40 days and 40 nights. And then the water prevailed 150 days, and the water abated for 150 days. And if you total this up, you'll see that it comes to 386 days. Well, Genesis 8:3 says the water dried up on the first day. So you have to minus a day, and you come up with 385 days. Now, that 385 days is an important number of days because, in fact, it is one of the days of the calculated calendar. That or the length of a year in the calculated calendar. And, of course, this is the calendar that most of the churches of God actually follow, is the calculated calendar. And I'll show you on the next slide a copy of this calendar. And this, as you can see in this calendar, you can see here that it calls out the length of the year in days. Year, 355 days, 354, 385, 355. So you can see that there's a variation in the number of days required to complete a year. Now, if you look down here, you'll see that in 1996, these dates, by the way, these dates are for the first of Tishri, or better known as the Feast of Trumpets. So in 1996, on Saturday, September 14th, that was the first day of the feast, the first day of the seventh month, which is the Feast of Trumpets. And the length of that year was 383 days. And so you can see now why, when I came across this particular length of time for the flood, it said something to me that this looks like it is, in fact, the calendar that God was using when he used his descriptions in the Bible. As a result of that, what I decided to do was to do a study and determine whether I could connect this length of time of the flood with the actual descriptions that we find in the Bible. Now, in order to do that, it required me to, I had to think this through. And many people, many men, have done a lot of studies in which they have dated the Bible, different things that happen in the Bible. They've given dates to those happenings. Now, they have all started in the present and have worked their way back, utilizing the length of kings' reigns, etc., historical events, and so this is what they've used. And of course, none of them really agree. You can hardly find two scholars that agree. And so my idea here was a little bit different. I thought this through and I said, this is a problem. It needs solution. It needs a solution. And the only real mathematical way that you can solve this problem would be by starting back at creation and coming forward. And in order to do that, you would have to recognize that you're going to utilize segments of time in order to do that. And the only segments of time that we really have that would be absolute, that you could trace coming forward from creation to the present time, would be the length of the day and the length of the seven-day week. Now, as a matter of belief, we believe that the day that we keep, that we call a Saturday, we believe that is the Sabbath. And this is a matter of faith, really. We have no real proof. But what this study is going to do is going to prove that the very day that God created the Sabbath on, the seventh day of the creation week, is in fact a replication of 7 days to the present time. Now you might think, well, that's a pretty bold statement. In addition to that, I'm going to show that the holy days, or the high Sabbath days, those days like the Feast of Trumpets, the Day of Atonement, the Feast of Tabernacles, all of these days, in effect, were fixed along with the fixing of the seventh day or the Sabbath day. This is a pretty strong order to be able to prove all of that. But in fact, this is what you are going to be able to see And you'll be able to see this through relatively simple mathematics and a simple, straightforward understanding of the motion of the moon around the Earth rotating, which would give us a day, and the Earth rotating about the sun, which would give us a year's time. Now, if we think about this, we have to understand, when was the Earth really created? At what time? And we can see here in Job 38, God is really taking this opportunity to give Job a lesson in humility, really. And he's telling Job, he says, "Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me, if you have understanding, who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched the line upon it? To what were its foundations fastened? Or who laid its cornerstone when the morning stars sang together, all the sons of God shouted for joy?" So we can see here, this is a description of the actual creation of the universe. And of course, the earth is part of the universe, so it would be included in, or the universe is really connected with the earth. And so therefore, we can see that this was the initiation. But something took place. Something happened that caused the earth to become something other than what we see here. And we can look here at Genesis chapter 1, verse 1 and 2. "In the beginning God created the heavens and the earth." Well, that was Job 38. "And the earth became without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters." And so we can see that at this point in time, that the earth needed to be recreated because something had taken place. We're not going to enter, we're not going to look at that. We're just going to recognize that this is what took place. And so this is, in a sense, important because it's going to help us to understand what a day truly is. When does it start and when does it end? That's a question that we need to resolve. Now, we see here in Genesis 1:5, God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. So the evening and the morning were the first day. And so he's telling us, it's clear, God is telling us, look, the day starts in the evening. Now, if we think about this just a little bit, it would be clear that the creation, the point of the creation here is the Garden of Eden. And so therefore, if the first day started at evening, then the people, or if you were 180 degrees opposite on the earth, you would be at high noon. And so it's pretty clear when you think about the brethren in Australia, they keep their Sabbath is ahead of our Sabbath. And so this is really, it's self-explanatory when you think in those terms. Now, the question is, well, how do we start the day? When do we start a day? And this is important to understand because it is going to enter into the information that we're going to be looking at. And so we have to see when does God start a day? Well, he says here, the evening is when he started it. And here's the information to back this up. "And the king of Ai hanged on a tree until evening. And as soon as the sun was down, Joshua commanded that they should take the corpse down from the tree." Again, we see in Joshua, "And after Joshua struck them and killed them and hanged them on 5 trees, and they were hanging on the trees until evening. So it was that at the time of the going down of the sun that Joshua commanded, and they took them down from the trees." Again, you can see it explains that this time is at the going down of the sun. That is the end of the day. Continuing on, here we find a legal definition for the end of the day, and we find that in Deuteronomy 24 in verse 15. Each day you shall give him wages and not let the sun go down on it. So again, you see, well, this is the end of the day. You figure out the man's wages after he puts in his time, right? Well, that's the legal definition. And we find in Daniel, speaking prophetically, and the vision of the evening and mornings, which was told to me true, Daniel 8:26. Now, we also have a place in the New Testament which spells out when the end of the day was. And this is a rather interesting situation. In Mark and in Luke, Mark 1 and Luke 4, we find the story of Christ going into a synagogue. And at that synagogue, he heals a man. And as a result of that, the president of the synagogue said, we can't have this. You do the work on 6 days, not on the Sabbath. You don't heal on the Sabbath. And so, well, what was the result of that? The people were fearful of this man who was in charge of the synagogue. And as a result, what did they do? Well, it was clear. It says, now when the sun was setting, that's when they brought their sick to Christ for healing. At that time, and it's spelled out in two, in not only in Mark, but also in Luke. And so you have that same story. And it shows that the people recognized, well, wait a minute, when does the Sabbath end? Well, it ends at sunset, which means that's when the day ends. So they waited until the sun was setting before they brought their sick to Christ to be healed. And finally, we see in Ephesians 4, it says, be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath. Again, depicting the end of the day. So we can see that in the Old Testament, in the New Testament, the end of the day is sunset. And the beginning, of course, at the new day is basically simultaneous. Now, the question is, as we are going to be looking at this, we need to understand something about when God set in alignment this calendar that we are going to be looking at. And we see this here in this Genesis chapter 1, verse 14 through 19. Now, it's rather interesting because most people, when they read this book, Genesis, and they read this scripture, they think that God created the sun and the moon and at this time and the stars. He didn't really create them at this time. It was clear because we showed that the creation had occurred earlier. And so, therefore, at this time, what is God really doing? Yeah, let's read this. Then God said, let there be lights in the firmament of heavens to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and seasons and for days and years, and let them be for lights in the firmament of heavens to give light to the earth. And it was so. God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also. God set them in the firmament of heavens to give light to the earth and to rule over the day and over the night and to divide the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good, so the evening and the morning were the fourth day. And so what is he really doing here? Well, what he's really saying is that in that first scripture that we looked at, we recognized that there had to be the sun had to be in existence because the first day we had light. We had an evening and a morning. And so, therefore, it was in existence. What this statement is saying that God aligned, he set these heavenly orbs into place. It's like setting a clock, setting it to the correct time. And so the correct time for the setting was, in fact, that day one was the initiation of this gigantic clock that we call the universe. There's a basic principle that needs to be acknowledged, and that God set the heavenly orbits as a giant clock, making the universe operate as a whole. Now, this is something that if you've done any investigation as far as astronomy is concerned, you'd recognize that this is what the scientists realize, that the entire universe moves as a unit. Continuing on, then God said, let there be lights in the firmament of heavens to divide the day from the night. Okay, well, what is that, the dividing of the day? Well, it was the rotation of the earth. That is exactly what took place in that first scripture. God started the rotation of the earth so that it would, as far as God is concerned, would be the length of one day. And let's see, the night, let them be for signs and seasons, and for days and for years. The sun is for days and years. The moon is for seasons, holy days, festive gatherings, appointments, and signals. Now, this is basically what God, he set this up. Well, he set it up for us. Now, the question is, can we look at this creation and determine what his calendar actually reflects? And what, usually when I make this presentation to a group, one of the questions is, well, yeah, but what happened when God changed or had the long day of Joshua? And what also happened when he set the clock, sundial back by 15 degrees in 2 Kings? Well, the reality is nothing really happened. I mean, as far as the day is concerned, the thing is that when God stopped the sun in the sky, he just stopped the clock. That's all. He stopped the clock. The sun stayed there. You can study and read Joshua, and you'd see that that's exactly what happened. So what took place there? Did the day change? No, the day didn't change. It remained the same day. If it was a Thursday that this took place on, it remained a Thursday. It didn't change. And so when the clock started again, when the earth started turning and it continued its cycle about the sun, then the time continued on. So when the sun went down on that day, it was the end of the day. Didn't change the day count. The length of the day as we measure time would have been longer. That's true. And he did this for a purpose, to give Joshua time to complete his destruction of the enemy. Now, in 2 Kings, we see that he actually set the clock back. And this isn't a problem, really, when you consider that it's just like would be like a mechanical clock. You'd set it back, and God just set the clock back by 15 degrees. It's no small thing as far as we're concerned, but as far as God's concerned, it wasn't, but it was an important sign to King Hezekiah. And, of course, to us looking at this, this was a fantastic thing to be able to do. Now, actually, the clock is, God's clock is a little bit different than from the way that we think about time. And when we look at time, the scientists, they've figured this out, and they said, well, look, now, wait a minute, 1 second is lost every 10 years. In the 24-hour period. Well, really, what they're really saying is the Earth is slowing down a little bit. That's what that's really telling you. Very slightly, but it's slowing down. The rotation of the Earth around the Sun changes at the rate of 10 seconds every 2,000 years. And again, you can see that the system is slightly slowing down. And what this really means is that, as far as we should be concerned, time really isn't really been affected hardly at all. I mean, 10 seconds in 2,000 years, it's not worth talking about when you're thinking in terms of days and years. Now, what this really means is we can go back, because we know that this is a constant, and we can now go back and figure a year on the present 365 and a quarter days. Now, I call this the solar year because this is the average length of the year. And with that average length of the year, you have a 11.232-minute shortfall. So it isn't really quite 365 and a quarter. And this is an important thing to understand, is you'll see that it figures into our calculations. And if we look at this, this little piece of time, and you're going to see how this works out, you have 11.32 times. If you take this times 128, it equals 23.96 hours and gives you the reason for subtracting a day at the end of this period of time. See, in other words, if you're going to keep your clock, our calculations accurate, you have to take into consideration that 11 minutes. And so if you use that, you'll see that you're almost one day. Well, if we would go to 129 years, it would be 24.148 hours, this being greater than one day of subtraction. So you wouldn't really use that. The other thing is the 128-year cycle was chosen because it was a multiple of four, thus simplifying the mathematics. In addition, if this error of 0.0384 were calculated, it would amount to 1.8 hours and 6,000 years, a negligible amount. When you think about this in terms of a calendar, it really wouldn't affect the calendar at all, and we are basically under the understanding that we're someplace around 6,000 years from creation. So that's why I used that figure. Now, what I'm saying here is the solar calendar proves biblical Sabbaths. Well, the reason that I use this title here is to show that this calendar, which is, in the reality is, it's a combination of the Earth rotating on its axis to give us the day, the moon circling the Earth, and the Earth in turn and the moon circling the Sun. And so this is what we're looking at. This is what we're calling the solar calendar. And you're going to see how that is going to work out. Now, remember I said I needed to go back to a finite piece of time that I could follow from creation and bring that series of times forward. Of course, this doesn't really solve the whole problem. It is only part of the problem, because what it's going to allow us to do is to create a calendar that started at creation and came forward. Where does it meet our present calendar? We don't know that. This is what we're going to see as we go through this study. Now, take a look at this. You're going to see what I did is I said, well, okay, here's year one, creation. It started, I took the seven-day week, and it started on the seventh day was the first Sabbath, the 14th, the 21st, etc. And if you follow that through, you come to the last Sabbath occurs on the 364th day. Well, that means if we go to year two, we're going to have a day carryover. And we'll see that on this chart. The first Sabbath is on the sixth because of that one day. 6, 13, 20, etc. And the last Sabbath occurs on the 363rd day, which means you have two-day carryover to start the third year. Year three, we find that the first Sabbath is going to be on the fifth because you had the two-day carryover. And the last Sabbath on the 362nd day. So we have a three-day carryover going into the fourth year. So here's the fourth year. First Sabbath is on the fourth. The last Sabbath is on the 361st day. But remember, we recognize that you have 365 days and a quarter in each year. So we have a leap year, which adds the single day. Now, we're all familiar with that. It's quite simple, quite basic. And so, in this fourth year, you have 366 days. And so the result is that you will have a five-day carryover instead of a four-day carryover like you might think you would have. So you have a five-day carryover. Sabbath is on the 2nd, 9th, 16th. The last Sabbath is on 359th day. Results in what? A six-day carryover to start the sixth year. We go to the next calendar on the six-year calendar with a six-day carryover. The first day of the first Sabbath falls on the first day of that year. The last Sabbath falls on the 365th day. Well, what does that mean? That means that on the seventh year, you start over just as if you were on the creation year. So you go into the eighth year, and the eighth year, the count is the same as the second year. And so as we go into the ninth year, you see that there is a change, because normally, if the procedure were, you would just have a two-day carryover. But because the eighth year is a leap year, you have a three-day carryover. The ninth year, you have the same as the fourth year with a four-day carryover to the tenth year. And so here we have the tenth year. The first Sabbath is on the 3rd, the 10th, the 17th, and the last Sabbath is on the 360th day. This is a five-day carryover for the 11th year. So, you know, well, so what, you might say. Well, here's so what. You can, if you think about this, you can create types of years. And this is what I did. I said a type 1 has a one-day carryover. A type 2 has a two-day carryover. A type 3 has a three-day carryover. A type 4 has a four-day carryover. Type 5 has a six-day carryover. Type 6 has 0 days carryover. Type 10 has a five-day carryover. What's the significance of this? The significance is these are the only types that you can have. You can go through the calendar as much as you wish, but this is what you end up with, 7 types of years. So when thinking about this, now this would allow you to build a calendar that could stretch out for over 6,000 years. And it would be accurate. Let me show you what I mean. Here's what I did. I took and I created a calendar. This is the solar calendar. And what I'm saying here in this calendar is you can see year 1, 365 days is the length of the year. This is the days that are carried over, and this is the type of the day. It's a type 1 year. So the next year is year 2, 365 is a 2-day carryover. It's a type 2, etc. Type 3, and we go to the fourth year, which is a type 10 because it has the leap year in it. And you can see what I did here. I said 65, 65, 65, 66. Every fourth year is a leap year. But remember, I pointed out to you a fact about the understanding that, well, we don't really have 365 and a quarter, and that it's going to take 128 years to accumulate that day. Well, what that means is at 128 years, you have to subtract that. But let's look at this calendar, continue to look at this calendar. Here you can see that I continued the 11th year, et cetera. It keeps on going. When I get to the 28th year, it's a rather interesting thing that happens. You can see here that this is just like the creation year. It starts all over. 1, 2, 3, 10, 5, 6, 1, etc. And so every 28 years initially, the calendar is repeating itself. When I was doing this study and I came along, I thought, whoa, this is really something that can be utilized. Well, yeah, it can be utilized in that we go here, we look at 56, just to show you that, in fact, it does do that. You can see here, here's the 56th year, and the 57th year, it starts over. 1, 2, 3, 10, 5, etc. You get to the 84th year, and you see the same thing. It starts over. And here we get to the 112th year, and you can see the same thing. It starts over. But when we get to the 128th year, we got a problem. At 128 years, the sequence changes, and you do not have the repetition that you had every 28 years. Now, I got to this point. I thought, well, does this mean that the calendar is constantly changing? Well, not really. Because as I went through the study and I kept building these calendars, I came to the year right here, 896, and we find that at 896th year, the calendar, guess what? It starts all over again. 1, 2, 3, 10, 5, etc. And this is exactly what happens. So every 896 years, the calendar repeats itself. Now, you can understand that with a calendar like this, you can carry this calendar out indefinitely. You can carry it out beyond 6,000 years and not have a problem. Let's take a look. Here's if we wanted to find out how to set up a calendar for the year 3101, it would be real easy. We would go to this calendar chart that I call 3, and you would look for the year that you want. If you want 3101, you would go to the previous year, and you would see, oh, this is a type 1 with a one-day carryover. So that means that the first Sabbath of this year would be on the 6th day of the year. So it's pretty easy. The ultimate here is the fact that this calendar is not disputable. I mean, it's absolute. You can say what you want, but anyone's calendars who disagree with this calendar has to be spurious. It can't be right, because this is just a matter of simple mathematics, isn't it? 7 days, 7 days, 7 days, you add them up, and this is how it comes out. And you lay this alongside of the circuit of the earth about the sun, and you come up with this factual calendar that you can see will be an absolute calendar regardless of where you want to go. Now, in this calendar thing, we have the detractors say to us who keep the calculated Hebrew calendar, they say, well, you know, we've got all these crazy postponements. We've got all these reasons for changing the calendar. Well, we're going to see that actually they don't really apply, but they have a purpose. Those postponements have a purpose. Now, the Jewish authorities, they use a lot of technical terminology to fog up the issue. And they say, well, you know, we have to move this date because we can't have two fast days in a row. Or if the sun is setting on a Tuesday at this point in time, we have to move the calendar by 2 days, etc. Well, the real understanding about all that is it's there for one purpose, to keep the alignment of the calendar with the moon, the sun, and the rotation of the earth about the sun. And so this is the reason. And it's pretty easy. Once you have the right explanation, you can understand how postponements work. They're pretty simple, the reality is. The average cycle of the moon is 29.53059 days in a month. Therefore, in 12 months, it is only 354.36 days long. Remember that I showed you in the calculated calendar example that we looked at that you have different lengths of days. And here's one of the reasons we're going to see. And this is about 11 days short of the solar year of 365 1/4 days, making it necessary to add an additional month 7 times in 19-year solar cycle. Now, I mentioned the 19-year solar cycle. Well, what that 19-year solar cycle is, it's relatively simple to understand. What it is a point in time when the moon, the earth, and the sun come into alignment. But they don't come into alignment exactly. There is a little bit of a problem in that alignment. Now, we'll see that this what takes place here is the 19-year solar cycle has to be, you have to add an additional month every or additional month 7 times in 19-year cycle, in that 19-year cycle. This also regulates the number of days per year. The only purpose is to keep the Hebrew calculated calendar aligned to the moon cycle of 19 solar years. So this is going to be an important factor that we're going to be looking at, is this 19-year cycle. Now, the result, this results in 6 types of years. 3 12-month years of length of 353, 354, 355 days, plus 3 13-month years of 383, 384, and 385. You notice the 385 here, right? Remember back what we talked about as far as the flood year was concerned? That was 385 days. That was the key to getting me to think about this. Now, we have the 13-month long years are 3rd, 6th, 8th, 11th, 14th, 17th, and 19 years in the 19-year cycle. This is quite an interesting, to me anyways, was quite an interesting revelation when I started looking at this, because when I started out in the beginning of 208, when I first started looking at this problem, I didn't really know any of this information. And so I had to do a fair amount of studying to resolve these different problems. As a result of these, I thought I would simplify this by making a chart. And in this chart is going to show you, it says here, short years in Hebrew calendar calculations. Well, remember, we said the length of year, 353, 354, 355. Well, what if I take these years and I say, well, the 1st of Tishri, here's the 7th month, is going to be on a Monday. Well, the first Sabbath of that month would be on the 6th. This automatically pushes the first Sabbath of that year to the first day. And you can see what I've done here. I've said, I put a red okay. It said, well, this year is okay to use. But this year is not okay to use. 354 with a Monday start for Tishri, you can't use it. And the reason is it get results in a 4/11/18 Sabbath of Nisan would result in the first day of Tishri falling on a Friday. This cycle cannot be used. The reason is that all of these postponements result in the fact that you cannot have the 1st of Tishri falling on a Sunday, a Wednesday, or a Friday. It's that simple. All these complicated rules that the Jews have are really boiled down to 3 simple things, and that is, you cannot have the 1st of Tishri on a Sunday, a Wednesday,
or a Friday.
And so that's what this reflects right here. It says, well, this would result in that. Now you can't use it. So the reason you can't use it is because it's going to put the calendar out of alignment with the cycle of the moon. And we don't want that. So you can't use it. And here we look here. If you have a Sunday start, of course, none of these can be used. Because a Sunday start results in a 2/9/16 start, and it puts the first of Tishri falling on a Sunday. So you can't use that. So we go to the next, we have a Saturday start. Well, you can see in a 53 length year, it's okay. 54, no. 55, yes. On a Friday start, no. None of them can be used. Okay, we go to a Thursday start, and we can see that here on a 353 length year, you can't use it. But you can use a 354 and a 355 length year. And on a Wednesday start, can't use it, period. Now, this is the most interesting one of all, and you'll see once you recognize an important part. You see that arrow there pointing to the seven. When you have a short year, there's only one time that you'll be able to use a Tuesday. The only time that you'll be able to use it is when you have a 354-day length year. This is an important understanding. You're going to see this as we get into the first calendar. 355, we can't use. And look what happens here. The first day, the first Sabbath is on the seventh. That should ring a bell to us for the creation. The first Sabbath of creation year is on the seventh day of the week. So this is what we're looking at. We go to the next calendar group here that are charts that I've made. And I titled this The Long Hebrew Years. So here you have 383, 384, 385. And we basically are going to go through the same thing. You can look at this, and you'll see that it results in the same thing. The only difference here is that we have 2 years in, when it begins on a Tuesday, we have 2 years that are okay, the 384 and the 385. The 383 year would not work. And so this is fundamentally is going to give us the understanding of the postponements. Now, we're going to go back to the calendar. This calendar was created by a gentleman who lived in the 1800s. He did this work. Came up with this calendar, which is what we're going to use, and you're going to see that this calendar, astonishingly, this calendar is accurate for over 6,000 years. It's right on. And you're going to see that the days that we find on here are going to be the days that are going to match up with that original calendar. That chart 3 calendar that I presented in the beginning, the 7-day solar calendar, it's going to match. This is where the interest really lies in these calendars. So if we look at this, we're going to see, here we see September 29th, 2011. Now this is, and the length of this year is a 354-day long year. And this is where we're going to be celebrating the Feast of Trumpets. This is the date that all, basically, churches of God, with the exception of those who have created different calendars, and they're going to be observing this day at different times. So we want to know that, well, is what we're doing correct? And so this is the calendar that we're going to use, and you're going to see some interesting things here. First of all, you're going to see that there are 13 of these cycles in this calendar that this gentleman, C.H. Lindo, created. And
in this calendar, he puts in here the Jewish year. And he says, this year, in October 2nd, 1845, the Jewish year would be 5,606 years from creation. That's what he's saying. And he's saying that this year, it should be 354 days in length. That's what he's saying. Now, you'll notice that he has a cycle number, 296. Now, you'll notice that I put here, in red, a number 12. Because this cycle, 296, is actually the 12th cycle in the line of 13 cycles. And we go over here, we see number 3. And this means this is the third cycle in line. And this is the seventh cycle in line. The reason that they seem, and well, you say, well, why didn't you put them in order, in the right order to start with? Well, no, they don't work that way. But you'll see how this is going to work out. Now, the other thing that you'll note here is that I have 6,939 days. And what this is a total. If you total up these lengths of years, you will find that this cycle will have 6,939 days in it. And this cycle will have 6,940 days. And this cycle will have 6,941 days. And actually, this is the these are the only cycles that you will have in C.H. Lindow's calendar. Now, we need to determine what was the beginning month of creation. I mean, if we follow Mr. Lindow's calendar, you would find that he calls out a different cycle for the beginning of creation. And he says in here, he speaks to Moses in Exodus 12. He says, and the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, this month shall be your beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year to you. Exodus 12, 1. Now, this was the only information that God gave to Moses that makes this statement, thus saith the Lord, really. There is no other statement in the Bible that delineates the first day of the creation, in reality, the first day. If you have the first day of the month, it is the first day of creation. Now, well, let's say, well, you know, God may have changed this. Is this in God's nature to change things? You know, think about the statements that we find, the biblical statements that we find about God. Oh, let's go back. He said, for I am the Lord, I do not change. That's pretty basic. I mean, that's pretty simple. Malachi 3:6. And in Hebrews, in the New Testament, we find, thus God, determining to show more abundantly the heirs of promise, the immobility of his counsel, confirmed it by an oath that by two immutable things in which it is impossible for God to lie, we might have strong consolation, who have fled for refuge to lay hold of the hopes set before us. If God changed his calendar, in effect, it would be like lying. In other words, if he said a person lived so many years, but he changed the length of his years, well, that's not a true statement any longer. Let's continue to look at these. Jesus Christ, the same yesterday, today, and forever. Hebrews 13:8. James, every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and comes down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow of turning. He's not changing the time. James 1:17. Jeremiah 33. Thus says the Lord, if you can break my covenant with the day and my covenant with the night, so that there will not be a day and a night in their season, then my covenant may also be broken with David. Now, in their season has to do with what?
the cycling of the moon. That's the season. And broken with David, my servant, so that he shall not have a son to reign on his throne with the Levites and priests, my ministers. And without going into great detail, this is, in fact, a truth today. But this is not the reason for the study. So I think that we should, in a way, take another look at E.H. Lindell's calendar, which I number chart 5 in the study. And it's a rather, when you consider that this man did this work without a computer, and as we're going to see, it's accurate for over 6,000 years, and he did this work without a computer, you'd have to say that he was quite an individual. Now, he wasn't a priest. He was what they termed at his day and age was a bookkeeper. And, of course, a bookkeeper dealt with figures and times and et cetera. And he was able to determine this. Now, as we look at this, again, this is the same thing. Here you see cycle 13, cycle 4, cycle 8. Here's cycle 1, cycle 5, cycle 9. If you would go through these cycles, you would find that the first of Tishri would fall in his, I believe it would be cycle, at the beginning of cycle 5 would be the first. If you carried this back, you would find it to be true. And you can do that simply by utilizing these numbers that he has here. Now, there are some things that I have added to his chart here. And these charts actually came from the Encyclopedia, the 11th edition of the Encyclopedia Britannica, which actually in turn was in Wikipedia, and that's actually where I got it, out of Wikipedia. And what I did is I made some little additions here to this calendar. You'll see here these yellow highlights that I have here. Now, those yellow highlights are there for a reason, because what they're going to tell you is that the year following this yellow highlight, the Passover would occur on a Wednesday. Now, the first Passover, as you will see as we look at the calendars, you will see was on a Wednesday. In addition to that, if you understand your Bible chronology properly, you'd realize that Christ was crucified on a Wednesday, not on a Friday. Simply put, you can't have 3 days and three nights, starting with a Friday and coming up with even a Sunday morning resurrection. It doesn't happen. And so that's why it has to be on a Wednesday. Now, you can see here how this works out. You can see, like, right here you have two yellow highlights together. And the result would be that this would be a possible Wednesday crucifixion, and this would be a possible Wednesday crucifixion. And this is some of the additions that I've made. In addition to that, you'll see that there are some red numbers here, and these will represent certain important times that biblically occur. Here you can see we have number 2, number 6, number 10. Let me see. Here's number 1. Here's the important. I wanted to point this out. Again, we see here that we have a Tuesday for the first of Tishri. And so what does that mean? Well, if we remember back, it means that the first day of that year would be on the seventh day of the week. Continuing on, we go through, there are 13 of these cycles. And the 13 cycles, if you added them up, you would find that it would amount to 247 years. Now, you'd kind of think, well, a calendar made in 1800s, how could that possibly be accurate over 6,000 years? Well, it is accurate. And you're going to see
that the accuracy, because as we go through these calendars, which in fact are going to represent important points in biblical history, and